have my job at home, I have my job at work, and I'm really clear which one of those is more important. Mm-hmm. And I think people who try to straddle these and treat them equally, I think really struggle, and they end up torn between them. I'm crystal clear on which one wins. Like, my family is more important than my work. And I love my work, but I love my family.
This is the L3 Leadership Podcast, episode number 170. What's up, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the L3 Leadership Podcast. My name is Doug Smith, and I'm the founder of L3 Leadership. We are a leadership development company devoted to helping you become the best leader that you can be. In this episode, you're going to get to hear our lightning round interview with Liz Wiseman. I first heard Liz speak a few years ago at the Global Leadership Summit, and I was blown away by her content, and so I've been following her and her work ever since, and it was such an honor to get to spend some time with her. If you're not that familiar with Liz, Liz is a researcher, speaker, executive advisor, and author of 3 books, including her New York Times bestseller, Multipliers. Liz spent almost 20 years of her career working for Oracle, where she created Oracle University. She was the VP of Human Resource Development, and she also led several global initiatives for the organization. Liz has also been named one of the top 10 leadership thinkers in the world. In the lightning round interview, you're going to get to hear what she's learned from coaching some of the world's greatest leaders, how she approaches work-life balance, what quote she would put on a billboard, her advice to her 20-year-old self, and so much more. You guys are going to love this. If you didn't get to listen to part one, I would encourage you to go back and listen to that in episode number 169, but you don't need to go listen to that in order to listen to this, but both are extremely valuable. But before we jump into the lightning round with Liz, just a few announcements. I want to let you guys know that we recently introduced L3 Leadership Membership. That's right, you can now become a member of L3 Leadership. You might say to me, well, Doug, why become a member? Because I believe every leader needs a group of leaders to go through life with that will encourage them, hold them accountable to their goals, and help them reach their potential. At L3 Leadership, we've developed a community of leaders that will help you do just that. As a member, you'll get access to our community of leaders. You'll have the ability to join a mastermind group, which I believe is absolutely critical to your success. You'll get access to extra resources, content, and a member-only forum on our member-only website. Membership's only $25 a month, and you can sign up at l3leadership.org/membership. I want to thank our sponsor, Henny Jewelers. They are a jeweler owned by my friend and mentor, John Henny. My wife, Laura, and I both got our engagement and wedding rings through Henny Jewelers, and they are just an incredible company. Not only do they have great jewelry, but they also invest in people. John gave Laura and I a book to help us prepare for our marriage, and he's been investing in me as a leader, a dad, and a husband now for many years. So if you're in need of a good jeweler, check out hennyjewelers.com. I also want to thank our sponsor, Alex Tulandon. Alex is a full-time realtor with Keller Williams Realty, whose team is committed to providing clients with highly effective, premier real estate experiences throughout the greater Pittsburgh region. He's a member and a supporter of L3 Leadership, and he would love the opportunity to connect with you. If you'd like to learn more about Alex and ways to connect with him, go to PittsburghPropertyShowcase.com. And with all that being said, let's dive right into the interview with Liz, and I'll be back at the end with a few announcements. Liz, I just want to take a few minutes and talk to you about coaching and consulting. You get to spend time with some of the greatest leaders on the planet. And I'm just curious, what separates the people you love working with, the leaders you love working with, versus the ones who might frustrate you to work as a consultant?
Well, you can imagine I love working around multipliers. I think most people do. But I also enjoy coaching someone who's trying to explore and get rid of some of their diminishing tendencies. But I'll tell you the thing I notice in the very, very best leaders. And, you know, I'm sure there are people who've done really rigorous research on this, but here's what I notice is that the best leaders have a filter and a bucket, a filter and a bucket. And they have this ability, and it's about presence and it's about space, that when you go in to meet with a really great executive, they have this ability to be in the moment and to filter out everything else that's happening around them and to just focus on this issue at hand. It might be sort of a form of focus, but it's not just, okay, I'm focusing in on, okay, Liz is here to see me and we're going to talk about this. It's not just focus. It's what they're able to put aside and cast away and let go of for that moment. And you feel as if they have no cares in the world and that the issue you're there to talk about them is the most important issue on the planet. I was blown away the first time I went to go meet with Tim Cook. I've coached a number of executives on Tim Cook's team. And when I first went to meet Tim, you would not have guessed this man was running Apple. He just had this ability to put everything aside and just be present. And it's this filtering thing, and it's not saying everything that you think of. It's this ability to hold back and keep things at bay and create this container for a conversation. And I also noticed the very best leaders have a bucket, meaning that they don't let loose everything that they're thinking or everything that they want to do. They release their ideas slowly. They dispense their opinions in small but intense doses, and they release things at the rate that organizations can absorb them. And in other words, they have a bucket, a holding tank that they can say, okay, that's a really good idea, or that's something we should do, but I'm going to put it over here and I'm going to hold that until the organization is ready for it. I worked for the CFO at Oracle for a number of years, Jeff Henley. He was a great executive. And it was one of the things he taught me. Like, we were coming up with all these programs, and he was like, whoa, slow down there, cowgirl. You know, you've got too many programs. And I thought he meant we were spending too much money. And he's like, no, you're producing things faster than the organization can absorb them. Work at the level that the organization can receive and absorb. And so those are the things I notice about some of the best leaders. And I really have had a great opportunity to work with some amazing leaders and executives.
Yeah. So when you work with leaders at that level, where do you find yourself spending the most time with them? So what are you focused on more often than not? Do you see patterns in the issues that they're dealing with?
Well, probably the kinds of things that people want my help from tend to be around issues around engagement. How do I engage an organization? How do I, one of my favorite things to help coach someone on is the art of inquiry, and how do you ask good questions, and how do you get a perspective taking an inquiry happening around your organization?
And your advice is, if you don't mind sharing, or we have to pay for that.
No, I tell less, ask more. You know, really shift your ratio to asking. A lot of executives think that asking is a weak position, but asking is really a powerful position, because, you know, the best leaders not only ask the questions, they ask the right questions. And it's in asking a question that we focus the intelligence and energy of our organization, that we can provide incredible leadership by just asking. And that when leaders ask more, and ask more often, and ask harder questions, they actually earn more. People give them more.
That's good. Last question on coaching consulting. Why, if someone's listening to this, they're saying, wow, I can't believe the executives of Apple needed coaching, right? It seems like they're doing pretty well. Why does any organization or any individual actually need coaching and or consulting?
Because being leadership is lonely, and leaders live in what I call an arranged world and an echo chamber. We hear a lot about this term echo chamber right now, that, you know, it's lonely at the top. People don't get feedback very easily. And even when leaders really work hard to create open and safe environments, most people don't like to deliver bad news to the boss. Most people don't like to tell the boss what he or she is not doing well. It's hard to get feedback. They live in an echo chamber where their ideas, I find that most of the leaders that I've coached aren't power mongers. They actually underestimate their own power. They don't realize that a word from them goes a long way. And they might say, oh, I think that's a dumb idea, or gee, I think we should do that, or we should change our pricing. And they don't realize that the organization is scrambling around doing that. And so often their own ideas become more powerful, their own ideas bounce off of them, and you know, people become like not sycophants and yes men, but people tend to echo back what executives want to hear. And they live in this arranged world where everything is sort of convenient for them. It's like when celebrities get out of touch, they don't realize that their celebrity status has caused them to not have the same kind of problems that the rest of us have. And executives experience all of this. And part of what a coach can do for them is to help them see what they can't see. Like there are certain, they're like a car with designated blind spots that you just can't get around. And coaches become like mirrors. Like, let me help you see what you can't see. Like that thing that you do that you think is really working is actually the thing that's causing the most damage. And it's just giving people a little bit of an adjustment to how they're seeing things.
Well, hey, I want to jump into the lightning round. So we'll just ask a bunch of quick questions. There's so many things I want to ask you. Thank you.
I feel
so
like
much
I'm
again.
On a game show.
This should be a game show. I want to talk about family and work-life balance. So we were talking earlier, you travel, you have a crazy travel schedule. I know for Mother's Day, you wrote an article called Why Moms Make Better Bosses. You've clearly done from the outside, it seems like you've clearly done a good job of this. So how do you balance your work and life and family, and why do moms make better bosses?
Okay, let me start with moms making better bosses. Okay, so I wrote that article in Fortune, and you can find if you just Liz Wiseman Fortune Mother's Day or something like that. I didn't title the article. So I wouldn't claim that moms make better bosses. It's probably a little bit of clickbait because the editors title
those. It was good clickbait.
Kind of
articles. I love it.
I think moms make great bosses. Not necessarily better. And the reason why is there's certain skills that you gain as a parent. And these same skills are as available to dads as they are to moms. But you learn to prioritize as a parent. You learn to decipher the signal from the noise. You know, like I have a rule in my house is I have four kids. And so it's like, if it's not broken, burning, or bleeding, like it's not an emergency, you know? And so you learn the same things at work. You're like, okay, wait a minute. This isn't like business ending, career ending. Like nobody's bleeding here. We're going to be fine. You learn to work with diverse teams. Like as a parent, what's the saying that, you know, parents often say to their kids, like you get what you get and you don't throw a fit. And you know, with parenting, like you don't hire your kids, you don't get to fire them. Like I didn't get to like dial in, like I want a bunch of genius kids. Like my kids are really average. And you learn that you're not trying to raise thoroughbreds. You're just trying to help people be the best that they can be. And I think it's the same thing as a team. You know, it's a really important skill to learn as a manager, like how to lead a team of very diverse people that often you don't get to pick. That aren't thoroughbreds. And, you know, I think those are a couple of, there's so many skills that you gain as a parent that make you a better leader.
And then how have you balanced the time with your family? Cause I mean, I know the demands at Oracle, and I'm sure starting your own company, it had to be crazy. I have a 16 month old, and my wife and I are trying to figure all this out. And I'm like, I can't imagine more than one. I mean, it's just, yeah.
You know, well, actually, I found more helps. At one point, okay. I kept saying to my kids, I had four kids, and I kept saying, like, guys, be patient. Like, there's four of you and one of me, four of you and one of me. And I kept saying it over and over, four of you and one of me. And then I heard myself. You know how you hear yourself saying kind of crazy things? And I'm like, four of you, one of me. I'm like, wow, I don't have dependents. I have staff. Like, I'm like, okay, let me reframe this. Like four of you, one of me. I have four helpers. I have four helpers. And so instead of me like doing everything for them, I would be like, okay, Megan, can you take care of that? Amanda, you know, can you do this? Christian, can you? And so I think it forced me to put more responsibility onto them. You know, in a nutshell, how have I done this? There's nothing magical. I think if I've done one thing well, I think I've done two things that have helped. One is I'm really, really clear. I have two very important parts of my job, you know, I have my job at home, I have my job at work, and I'm really clear which one of those is more important. And I think people who try to straddle these and treat them equally, I think really struggle. And they end up torn between them. I'm crystal clear on which one wins. Like my family is more important than my work. And I love my work, but I love my family a lot more. And so being really clear on which one of those wins has really helped me to manage them, because I already know my family wins. And that's not that I don't ever go on the business trips, I don't do the things, but I feel no tension because the outcome of that decision has already been made. And then in trying to sort of straddle two worlds, I really have tried to integrate my worlds and unabashedly. I'm an unabashed working mom. I've learned a lot about leadership for my kids. I've brought all the skills I've had learned at work home with me. And what I've tried to do is not sort of work and be a mom. I've just tried to focus on this core skill of leadership, like learn how to lead really well. And I find that the leadership that we need in today's corporations is the exact same leadership we need in our homes. No one likes the hovering, micromanaging parent, and it produces the same bad results as the hovering, micromanaging boss. So I've just tried to lead and be really clear on which one wins.
That's great.
It hasn't been that hard. I wish I could say it was a battle.
No, that's awesome. I mean, it gives me a lot of hope. Yeah, I'm looking forward to growing our staff then. It'll be great. So what I see a bunch of books behind you. I'm assuming you're a reader. What books do you find yourself giving away or recommending most often?
Well, I tell you, the book that I have recommended a lot is Work Rules by Laszlo Bock. I think it, you know, he's defining kind of like, here's how Laszlo Bock is the former head of people operations for Google. And he's defining like, hey, here's how we think about people operations at Google. And I find it's a great recipe for the modern organization. I've given that away. I'm looking over at my bookshelf. I got a lot of books. I love Good to Great. I love it forever. You know, the problem is as an author, so many of these books that I have now on the shelf are written by my colleagues, fellow authors. There's this really lovely author community. And so there's so many books up there where I really know quite well the people who wrote those books. And so I feel like I can hardly recommend one because then I'm like, I want to recommend them all.
Hey, I'll take those two. I do want to ask you about writing quickly. Two questions I'll let you answer. What have you learned and what advice would you give to aspiring authors? And what have you learned about selling books? The more and more authors I speak to, it almost becomes the writing part's the easy part. Selling them is the difficult part. I'm just curious what you've learned about that.
These are hard questions. But what I've learned about writing a book is that your job as an author, here's what I told my publisher. I'd finished Rookie Smarts, my third book. And I said, you know what, Hollis, I at the end of these projects, I feel I feel like a kidney. I said, like, when you're writing a book, it's like you're taking poison into your system. And then you're having to purify that and produce something. So like you take in this messy, messy stuff and all this research and data, and your job as an author is to purify it and to create something that is simple. Hmm. And, you know, I guess my advice to would-be authors is the best books, the author has gone through a painful process of distilling and purifying and producing something that is simple rather than complex. And it's not easy. It's a painful process. When I told this to Hollis, she said, please do not share that with my other authors. No one wants to do that.
Yeah.
And what have I learned about selling books is that no one really cares about your book. That's what I've learned about writing books. Like when you write your first book, you're like, whoa, look at me, I have a book. And nobody cares about your books. And even when your books are popular, nobody really cares about them. People care about the value that the ideas have for them. So like, quit obsessing over your dumb book and share ideas that help people. That's what I've learned.
Love it. If you had to put a quote or one phrase on a billboard for the whole world to see, what would it say?
Well, if it was where my children drive, I would write, put it back after you use it. That's what I would put on the billboard. But if it was just somewhere for everyone, I think I would put put God in charge. Hmm. Let God navigate. And that might be a little sketchy on a billboard because people might actually think that, you know, I had something to do with directional advice. But, you know, I have just found that when you, and this has a lot to do with like that work family balance, is that when you really put your faith and you put God as the center pole in your life, that everything else works out, everything else makes sense. And that, you know, this is certainly not my saying. I've heard many people say this is like that God can make more of your life than you can, but it really requires this process of submission and humility to say, you know best, I'm going to put you in charge, and I'm going to drive, I'm going to do my bit, but I'm going to let you navigate. I'm going to let you tell me where to go. And maybe I'd put something like,
yeah, I love that.
Put God in charge.
To follow up with that, I'm curious, how do you incorporate your faith into your work? Obviously, you can't bring billboards like that into Apple. I'm guessing maybe you can. I'm just curious, how do you live out your faith in your work?
Well, I on a conceptual level, I just am sort of like I said, I'm unabashedly a working mom. I don't like hide the fact that I have lots of children and in my work. I let my personal life come through, and I'm a person of faith, and I've never been shy about that, and I bring it up because it's like hiding a part of who I am. But I do have to say that I do make a practice every time I give a speech or a presentation. I usually find some way to say I'm a person of faith. Maybe I tell a story that just mentions prayer or something. And I don't preach. I don't in any way, but I just am. And I would do that in a group of unbelievers and like just like that. It's just who I am.
Yeah.
And I'm really, what is it? There's a scripture, I think, is it Romans 1:18? I'm not great at the quotes on this, but it's like, you know, I'm unashamed of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And, you know, I don't need for you to make the same choice as I am, but I'm a believer and I'm not embarrassed about that. And I live in a part of a world where I think on the show, that TV show, Silicon Valley, I think there's quoted there that it said it's almost illegal to be a Christian. You know, I live in a very secular part of the world, very liberal, very secular.
Yeah. Well, I love that. I love that you live out your faith, and what an awesome opportunity you have on a daily basis living there. So thank you. Last few questions. If you could go back and have coffee with your 20-year-old self, what would you tell her?
You know, I would be more interested in channeling advice from my 20-year-old self to me now, which is like I feel like I had it figured out then. I often think, what would I do if I were 20 and unafraid? You know, it's that stay hungry, stay foolish, is what I try to do now. But if I had to say something to my 20-year-old self, I would probably say, have your sister-in-law Fronda be one of your bridesmaids. That's what I would tell my 20-year-old self. I made a really bad mistake of having my girlfriends be my bridesmaids. And I was just in the process of acquiring a sister-in-law who has become one of my dearest friends for life, but she wasn't one of my dearest friends then. And, you know, I think as you age, you realize that your family are the people who stay with you, and friends kind of come and go. And of course I have friends for life, but that your family are really your lifelong friends, and treat your family like your very, very best friends.
Yeah. If someone's listening to this and they fell in love with you and they're like, I love Liz, how can they connect with you, support what you're doing, serve you? And more importantly, how can we be praying for you as a leader?
Well, I'll tell you, here's what I'm taking on right now. I'm going to try to be fast lightning round on this. I'm very concerned about the divide that's happening in our nation. I'm very concerned about our inability to talk about hard things and our tendency to sit in our echo chambers and disrespect people who have political views that are different than our own. And I feel like we need to be building bridges and crossing these divides. So I'm doing some work with some colleagues trying to reestablish civil discourse where people can talk about things they disagree with, and they can talk about them with love and with respect. And so I'm doing some work with this, and I think I would love to have us all praying for each other, that we can open our minds and our hearts to people who think very differently than we do.
Yeah, I love that. Out of everything you've accomplished up to this point in your life, what are you most proud of?
The relationships, and particularly the hard-fought relationships.
And one day, looking back at your funeral, looking back on your life, what would you want people to say about you?
that other people grew around me. That would be sufficient.
Love that. And then last question, open-ended. If you had any advice to leave leaders with today, what would it be?
Well, do you want what I really would want to say?
Yeah.
Just don't be an ass. You know?
Yeah.
You know, just be human and treat other people with the same respect you want to be treated at work. It's amazing how many people, when they become bosses, they become jerks and they forget their basic humanity is, you know, be curious, be hopeful, be hungry, be foolish, but just don't be a jerk.
Yeah. Well, Liz, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
No, Doug, very nice talking to you. Thank you for what you're doing.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to my interview with Liz Wiseman. I really hope that you enjoyed it. You can find ways to connect with her and links to everything that we discussed and more at l3leadership.org/episode170. You can also listen to part one in episode number 169. If you haven't gotten a chance to do that, I would highly encourage you to do that. As always, if you enjoy this podcast, it would mean the world to me if you'd subscribe and leave a rating and review. It really does help us grow our audience, so thank you for that. And thanks again for being a listener. I'd never take one of you for granted. And if you want to stay up to date with everything that we're doing here at L3 Leadership, you can simply sign up for our email list at l3leadership.org. As always, I like to end with a quote, and I'll quote Brian Houston this time. He said this about a leader's goal. He said, "Relax on trying to be everyone's leader and just focus on being their friend. Leadership speaks for itself." I love that. Thanks for listening and being a part of L3 Leadership. Laura and I appreciate you so much, and we'll be back next episode.